Yeah.
Who are we checking out here?
Joe Manda.
Joe Manda?
Joe Manda. A lot of people hadn't heard of them, but they're from like the early 90s.
My sister, on one of the bumper pieces that you did, she called up and I had to go over to iTunes and buy the album for her.
Yeah. That was a Matisse Boom Boom Ba.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's a great song.
Yeah, it is. Well, she loved it. I sent her the whole album.
Man, we got so much to talk about here.
Well, I tell you, okay, let me get back. Before we get to the little bits and pieces, I want to talk about going back to school.
Okay.
We started here. Florida has finally started school, and the traffic has gone crazy here for a lot of reasons. And you saw the new designer wear for schools is a bulletproof backpack.
Now, where did that come from?
It says here, posted by Leslie Katz. I don't know what this is. It's on a blog. It's on the GPS-enabled, like the GPS-enabled school uniforms. So that you can find your kid when they get kidnapped, I guess, or something like that.
Or when they get shot and they're dead.
Or in the dead, that's right. You know, it's like a, you know, 121.5, one of those beepers that goes off when your plane crashes.
Right.
Anyway, these backpacks contain...
I want it to go off before the plane crashes, really, yeah. You know.
The bulletproof backpack, a practical back-to-school purchase, but it's not far-fetched an idea in these campus violence. These backpacks contain a 20-ounce, but they have a picture here, 20-ounce bulletproof panel. And it's by a company called MJ Safety Solutions in Massachusetts.
See, now that's the problem with kids today. They realize if they had any actually books in their backpack, yeah, they'd be bulletproof too.
Right, exactly. That's
it's tough to shoot through books.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. They put the ad for the backpack, $175 for my child's pack, and can ward off 97% of the bullets. It says here. Anyway, the...
I'd like to see it ward off whatever that guy in Virginia Tech had.
Yeah.
No, it would ward that off.
Well, a video ad on YouTube. Well, of course, you understand. Is it coming at an angle, you know, that kind
well,
of
yeah.
stuff? Just a slight angle.
Is it coming at your head?
Well, that's true. I love this. A video ad on YouTube shows the bags undergoing tests at the shooting range to the tune of Neil Young's Four Dead in Ohio. So that's... what the real story is teachers, because of a lot of reasons, the schools can't get teachers. And what I find interesting is the reasons given in these articles. Greenboro, South Carolina, retirement of thousands of baby boomer teachers coupled with the departure of younger teachers frustrated by the stress of working in low-performing schools is fueling a crisis in teacher turnover that is costing school districts substantial amounts of money as they scramble to fill their ranks for the fall term. And they go through here. The title of this is With Turnover High, I guess that's not the name of this high school. With turnover high, schools fight for teachers. Here in Guilford County, North Carolina, turnover has become so severe in some high-poverty schools that principals were hiring new teachers for nearly every class every term to staff its neediest schools before the classes on August 28th. Recruiters have been advertising nationwide and offering bonuses up to $10,000 for instructors who sign up to teach Algebra 1. Well, this is a rather lengthy article. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But what it boils down to is, we had schools where we didn't have a single certified math teacher. Now, the problem I can tell you right now is the unions. I mean, the simple fact is that you can say what you want, but the market would figure this out in no time at all, except that there is this medieval guild mentality that has to do with teachers.
And you have to go,
and you have to go and get certification. Now, if you've ever been, and I know some people that have gone through here locally at the University of Florida, before you even go to a specialty, you have to go through this school of education here. Well, tedious. I mean, it gives tedious and boredom a bad name. I mean, it takes a special kind of really person who can't score well on anything else to go to those schools. I mean, to be interested in that kind of stuff. It's like Homer, you know, when he says he can't concentrate and a flower outside or whatever that show was. I mean, that's the kind of people, unfortunately, you end up recruiting. Now, I expect that some Jimmy Doan teachers are going to write in, and you are the good ones. You know, there are certainly out of there 25 million or there's something like 50 million kids, K through 12, are going to school in the next couple of starting school in the next couple of weeks at you know, in those grades. And there are, you know, that number divided by 20 or 30 or whatever it is teachers involved at all skill levels. So there's, I'm sure, 15, 20%, which would be, you know, a million good teachers, but there are some real slugs in this business. And when you go through and find out what they have to offer in order to retain these people, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's all kinds of signing bonuses, and still they're talking 3 to 5 years for anywhere from a 33% to 50% turnover, even with that stuff. Nearly a third of new teachers that leave the profession after just 3 years, and after 5 years, half are gone. Here's one of the problems. As you read this article, you find out what the real problems are. The federal No Child Left Behind law requires schools and districts to put qualified teacher in every classroom. Well, guess what? I mean, right away, what's a qualified teacher? I can tell you right now, I have a math degree. I mean, I would, and I have, in fact, taught one of these junior
children. Well, people. Let's put him to the test.
Exactly. And I'm not certified for anything except that I happen to know, I can tell you this much, I can teach Algebra 1. I mean, with a math degree, having gone through differential equations and having managed to drink enough alcohol to forget everything back down to maybe Algebra 2, but I can certainly do Algebra 1, I can guarantee you that, and in spades, an entertaining method. But
can you do it in Chinese?
No. Okay. And no, hardly no foreign languages, and I'd have a hard time, be even hard-pressed in Espanol. But the point is, not allowed to do it. There are tons of people, I think I've said before, the way to the school solution, teacher problem, is, I would tell you this much right now, is get the certification out of the way. You can hire and hire a lot of people part-time. In other words, you could get a lot of people who maybe have another job, and you could have them come in and like do two classes a day. And that's all they would do. They would do Algebra 1, two classes a day, and go home. I mean, you would have a phenomenal number of teachers that would take that, even retired people that, you know, are on medicine, or even, you know, some of them would have to like sober up maybe before they came in. Or they want to come in early before drinking time, which starts at noon. But I mean, whatever it is, the point is you can get people to do the teaching fairly quickly. And the other thing is, with that number of teachers, when you think about it, somebody's only teaching one or two classes, even if they're bad, the damage is minimal. Right now, you've got a teacher that's there all the time. I mean, she's ruining, if she's bad or he bad, it's 5 or 6 classes a day, 5 days a week that get destroyed. I mean, you know, a generation.
My math tutor in college was phenomenal. I mean, he could sit down and teach you anything. Nick
right.
Distrigidiou, man, he'd rock and roll. I mean, he was better than any of the teachers that you had in class as far as being able to teach.
Well, that's my point is that, and as a tutor, and they talk in here about how they, one of the underperforming schools, the way they did it was they hired a bunch of tutors to come in and do this. That's what I'm talking about. And when you have somebody to come in for an hour or two a day, or a week, or whatever it is. I mean, you can schedule this kind of stuff around people's schedules that are certainly able to teach a second grader. Anybody knows, any kid that you could, the simplest test in the world, if you want to teach them geography or social studies or whatever it is, there are just jillions of people, in spite of what you see on Jay Leno's jaywalking, the test you could give for something like that would not be a 4-year educational whatever it is. You could give a 20 questions. Well, it's like that thing we saw on the internet the other day. What was it, 30 questions they asked? And what was the average number of right answers? It was about the history of the United States and so forth. A lot of my friends are getting like 20 out of 30. And I got 27. And
right.
And I thought I did pretty well, but didn't get them all.
Right.
But the point is that kind of a test. And
you're talking about innovative educational
right.
techniques here.
That's right.
And this is the problem that we have with a centralized system. Again,
it's a monopoly.
And the other thing, not only is the monopoly and crowds out the competition, but it's a centralized system which has, by definition, is not going to approach the problem from different ways. They're
right.
going to try to solve all the problems one way.
Right.
And they're not going to be able to innovate at all. And you won't see that type of approach where they would try to allow certain teachers do this or do that. You won't see different approaches. Somebody's going to try to do it from the top down, like the Obama plan.
Right.
And this is another instance of where dividing up the job amongst all of the people by, say, selling off all the schools to the private market would handle the problem some way or another. Let me give you an example why. If they don't get the solution right, the government with their solution, if that's not the right solution, they have to wait like a whole nother year to try something different.
Right.
If they were to sell off all the schools and let the individual people make all the decisions, some of them would get it right.
Right.
And in one generation, that is 1 year, all the people who got it wrong could imitate the schools right. that got it right.
That's right.
And they could adapt.
That's
but
right.
with the current system, you're just not going to get any innovation or adaptation. You're going to get one person's vision of the grandiose womb of education, and if it's wrong, the whole thing fails.
Well, again, here's some more on this article. Tim Daly, president of New Teacher Project, a group that helps urban school districts recruit teachers, said attrition often resulted from chaotic hiring practice because novice teachers are often assigned at the last moment to positions for which they weren't even interviewed. Later, overwhelmed by classroom stress, they leave the field. But most of the urban districts have no coherent hiring strategy. If there isn't any maliciousness this in, Mr. Daly said, it's just a conspiracy of dysfunction. And I've noticed this before. It is a stunning when you see, it's like the budget here in Alachua County. I went down and talked to him the other day, and I said, if you wanted to design something on purpose with maliciousness to make something obtuse and obfuscate what's actually going on here, you couldn't have done a better job than this. But I have no doubt that the people that put the budget here together in Alachua County were honest, well-meaning people. But if you can't find anything out from that budget, it is like, well, because, number one, there's no profit. There's no P&L. There's no profit and loss statement because there is no profit because it's a government entity. And there is no there's no measure like income and outgo. And there's no PE, price to earnings ratio, because there's no earnings. Whereas I could pull down General Motors 10K, which was actually smaller.
Or even a private college, Hillsdale.
Right, right. And yeah, I can pull down their statement, and in 20 minutes I can figure out if it's a good investment or not. I mean, I've made investment decisions investing $10,000 in the stock market based on, you know, 20 minutes of reading their financial statement. Whereas here, and not only that, not only can you not figure out what the hell they're doing, but it's by force. I mean, if you, I was there, they had a program here locally, and I'm a little bit off the subject here, but they had a program here locally for kids, at-risk kids, after school kids, a little program that's funded by the county. And it's, I don't know, it's like $80,000 or something like that. And what it does is to, it's an after-school program to keep from supposedly getting into trouble. And they had no way to measure any kind of success. They had no way to know if it was succeeding or not. They couldn't, they had no standards by which the crime or the calls to the sheriff's office were less or more. They just had no way of measuring any of it. And so I went down there and I said, you know, I don't see any results out of, first of all, I disagree with having the program anyway because it's a social program. But even let's just say for a minute, because you can't show me any efficiencies or any efficacy on this program, I'd like to have $5 knocked off my property tax because I don't want to pay for this. Well, I'd go to jail for that. I mean, they come around, they send the sheriff around with, you know, snarling dogs, blue lights, badges, and guns. And because I knocked $5 off my...
Yeah, you can't get out of it. And let me give you another example. We just had the school year just started down where I'm living, and my oldest daughter started high school, and they have a new system down there where you go to four classes from now until December. Only four classes. And then you get four new whole classes in January through May.
And so she's there more than 4 hours a day.
Yeah. She's there for a full day. But what she's doing is instead of taking eight classes over the whole year, she takes four in the first half of the year and then four in the second half of the year.
But my question just for, that only accounts for 4 hours a day. What does she do the other hours of the day?
No, she goes to class for an hour and a half each class.
Oh, hour and a half. Okay.
Right. So you get the full time.
Boy, I tell you, I'd be falling asleep in an hour and a half.
Me too.
Yeah, they tried that at, when I went to high school, and it failed miserably.
Yeah, I don't think you can get...
It's bad enough when you're clock watching after 50
minutes. 50 minutes is the max, man.
You start dying after that. Especially when you consider... Well, this brings up another point. They've come up with some new drugs besides the Ritalin and stuff. They've come up with some new drugs to the kids that got ADD or ADHD or whatever it is. But, I mean, the simple fact is you get any kid in a class, you get one kid that's disruptive in a class that maybe could make it for an hour, and you put them in there for an hour and a half, that lasts 30 minutes
well,
a shot.
This is somebody's reaction to somebody saying, well, the kids just barely get into class before they have to leave again,
right,
and there's too many subjects for them to concentrate on,
right,
and stuff like that. Well, okay, great. So somebody came up with a solution, and what they do, they implement it for the entire county.
Right.
That's the only way they can do it, because it's a top-down solution.
Right.
Now, they even thought, somebody, one of our senators down there, thought, well, hey, I want to do it slightly differently. And they came up with this amazingly complicated plan where the kids, these high school kids, would go to one class or one set of classes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then the second set of classes on Tuesday and Thursday. That's week A. And then on week B, they swap. So that you go... to the
right.
To the other classes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the second set on right. Tuesday, Thursday.
So you get 5 days over 2 weeks.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Again, high school students, they don't know where the heck they're going.
Right.
And
chaos.
Right. They tried to implement it in one of the schools down there.
Okay.
They did that for the first 2 weeks. They changed it
right.
yesterday. They scrapped
That's
the whole
amazing.
Thing and went
That's
back.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of times, although I will say this, with knowing the way their teachers union fight things, it wouldn't have surprised me that if something had come up with something that actually worked, that they still would have scrapped it.
But well, here's
in this
the
particular
thing.
Case,
you'll never know. They,
yeah,
they didn't put it in place for long enough to find out. 2 weeks, I'm sorry, that doesn't give you enough time to figure
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, exactly. 2 weeks. Now, that means they went through one cycle.
That's it.
Yeah, one cycle.
One cycle. 2 weeks. And enough parents were like, what the hell are you thinking? Now, look. If all the schools were led by individual people, you might have a school here or there try that program. And if they were more successful, then the other high schools could adapt. But you're not going to get that. You get the top-down control. You get a centralized system. You get one-size-fits-all. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work for everybody. And that's what's happening.
Well, of course, what's interesting about this particular article, as you read through this article, which is quite extensive, this one from Greensboro, North Carolina, with turnover high, schools fight for teachers. I've yellow lined a bunch of it. And I didn't read all of it, but in almost every paragraph, the solution is more money. And the way they're getting the teachers is they're bribing the crap out of them. And even then, they have the high turnover because what they're asking the teachers to do is not natural. You know, they're putting in these dysfunctional classes with dysfunctional students, and they are having to fill out all kinds of paperwork. As I think I mentioned in the last show, they had it here on not exactly on TV, but it was in the newspaper. They showed the new teachers at some gathering at some hotel here, and the title of the article, or first paragraph in the article, was they spent the whole day inculcating or, you know, showing these teachers the ropes, a little bit about how to manage the students, but most of the day was how to fill out paperwork. That's what it was all about, how to fill out paperwork. Well, you know,
well, teachers have lost all autonomy as well.
Yeah.
Whereas before, teachers could maybe choose subjects and things like that. You can't have that. Now the subject is chosen by a school board for the entire county.
Right.
If you're lucky, that's the smallest division you're going to get in terms of curriculum.
Well, and of course, and now we come across, and I'm going to finish this up right now with this editorial from today, I think it's today, yeah, in the New York Times, and it's called In Search of Good Teachers. And the New York Times, in all its brilliance, doesn't even come close to getting it. It says here, with 50 million children set to return to school, districts all over the country are still scrambling to fill teaching positions that are having an especially difficult time finding qualified applicants to fill shortages in vital areas like math and science. And they go through here, public schools and colleges and universities, which rely heavily on tax dollars, are a good place to start with their new program here. The government should require them to turn out more high-quality teachers of all kinds, especially math and science teachers. I mean, how do you do that? How do you require? I mean, ideally, the enrollments at these colleges of education, which actually should be disbanded in my mind, enrollments at the colleges of education should be based not on whim, but on projected need. Now, here we are, the government, which has zero idea about demographics. I can tell you that. This is projected need is what they call demographics. That is, we will need, 20 years from now, we will need X numbers of engineers. We will need X numbers of people. And they have no clue. It all works out just, we're going to need exactly this many geriatric doctors, but no more and no less. So we're going to project for that. This is what this editorial is all about. They think they're smarter than the market. The states should find ways to reward colleges that turn out excellent graduates. I mean, there's so much here. What's an excellent graduate?
Forget,
what's
like
the reward?
A job.
Yeah. And they want to shut down the diploma mills, as they say. States and localities should develop a comprehensive plan, not just for hiring, but for mentoring and retaining teachers. Okay, yeah, well, fine. But see, it's all a government solution. The state does this. The state should do that.
The state
should do the other. You know, beyond these, that large urban districts, especially ones with particularly needy school districts, and again, what's a needy school district, need to abandon, now this is the only thing they say, need to abandon union work rules that give senior teachers the right to change schools whenever they wish. Now, I mean, here in one sentence is a problem. They need to abandon union work rules that give senior teachers the right to change schools whenever they wish. Senior teachers right now, if they don't like where they are, if they've been there for 10, 15, 20 years, can say, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to move over to this other school.
They want to captivate them.
They don't want to give them that right anymore. They want to give, and of course, the point is they don't want to give any teacher. And the way the market works is if all the teachers, in other words, once you start in a school, and let's say it goes downhill, let's say it might even be a good school, magnet school, whatever it is, but let's say it goes downhill and you say, no, I'm not, or my husband has quit, or my wife has, you know, got a job across town and I want to go to, no, sorry, you're locked in by law. Hello. I mean, this is the state. They can't possibly get it right. I mean, this editorial talking about a solution is exactly a 180-degree out of reach, out of thing. They have no clue on how the market works. I'm just stunned. I'm here, and here the New York Times is actually a newspaper that is not subsidized by the government. I mean, they make money like anybody else, or not. They live or die on the market system, and yet they don't trust it for the education of kids. It's just stunning to me that this editorial actually makes any sense at all. I mean, just how stupid can you be when the solution to a problem that has been created by the state, but created by the government, created by a monopoly, created by force and violence, is the solution is more of the same.
People can't wrap their mind around it. They think, well, hey, look, the state is just people. If people can solve a problem, then the state can solve the problem, right? Wrong. The state's an institution. It's a system of organization. And it, like I continue to say, it's organized from the top down. You can't get innovation. You can't get independence. You're stuck with a single model, and it's just not nearly as flexible as the real world, the market.
Well, again, one of the things that you do count on government to some extent is for a lack of flexibility. It does add supposedly some measure of stability to what might be, you know, whimsical actions. It is a kind of a one of those called a sea anchor or something like that. But it's supposed to be small. And of course, now it's gotten so huge, it's making a lot of the rules. It's in the game. You know, it's dragging the whole thing, dragging the whole boat down. In other words, instead of just a sea anchor to kind of keep you on course, it suddenly is like this huge monster, you know, bullion.
It's pulling the Atlantic into the Pacific.
Right, exactly. Black hole, whatever it is. I mean, and again, I talked to, you know, when you listen to Freedom Main Radio, whatever, which I, unfortunately, he's, I don't know what's happened to him. He's kind of gone off the deep end. But I've listened to some of his older shows, the 600 and 700 series of shows. I've been re-listening to those. And he talks a lot about this sort of thing, about when you start to get any kind of government. He, of course, he's an anarchist, which makes anarcho-capitalist, which is, he makes a good case for it. What I'm saying, though, is for the moment, for my listeners, it's pretty obvious that this thing has gotten so huge, and you look at something like this monopoly that is education, and right away you can see every conceivable error in it. And I'm just stunned that the New York Times is, you know, can't see outside the box, can't see that the solution is so easy. It's just to just ban the whole thing. Same thing with Katrina. Get out. Nobody's here to save you. Bye-bye.
That's the unseen that we hear about in Adam Smith.
From Bastiat, right?
Right. They don't see what would be there if the current system wasn't there.
It's the devil that you know. I mean, it's one of those things. That's exactly what it is. It's the devil that you know. I even though if you hold out, you say, you know, things could be a lot better than this. You don't have to take this punishment every day. Yeah, but you know, I know it's coming. I know when it's coming every day. I think I'll live with that. You know, you mean you want me to go out of this prison and take my chances out there? Yeah, it's a bright, smiley day. You have to do a little extra work. No, I don't know. I think I'll stay here and take the punishment. Exactly.
Take your beating.
That's it.
My favorite one was I got one more school thing. Did you see where in last week in Mesa, Arizona, they suspended a boy for drawing a sketch of a gun?
Yeah, I saw that. Amazing.
School officials suspend a 13-year-old boy for sketching what looked like a gun, saying the action posed a threat to his classmates. The boy's parents said the drawing was harmless doodle, and school officials overreacted.
He should have told him it was a penis with nuts, and probably would have gotten off on that.
And those aren't bullets.
He got convicted of a sex offender. Yeah, that's what I want to know, is how much ammo did he draw? Because, you know, if he didn't draw a lot of ammo, then not a lot of kids were in danger. Obviously.
I mean, literally, I can't, of course, I'm sure.
Was it an automatic weapon or semi-automatic?
I mean, I've drawn so many war scenes.
Teachers getting decapitated. Oh, God. I used to draw, you know, propeller planes coming down, flying in the fourth grade. I'll never forget this. Coming down and shooting the head off my teacher.
right.
You know, blood everywhere, you know. Just, oh, yeah.
I mean, we would compare war scenes. Oh, on our notebook noodles after class.
Oh, yeah. And we all turned out fine.
No debate there.
Exactly. The school made him feel like he committed a crime. They are doing more damage than good, said the boy's mother.
Well, you did see along those same lines. I mean, that not only is that just unbelievable, of course, you know, drawing a picture, but we are the country with the most guns.
Yes.
And what do we have? We have, like, not only are, I mean, we're number one.
Right.
What do we have, 270 million guns or something in this country? Or something like that.
I mean,
it's like
one for every, or nine for every
10 people.
Yeah, I mean, we're really, I mean, I love it. You know, the fact, I mean, we got more guns than like Afghanistan or someplace.
They said something like 12% are registered.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
If we could just get our hands on a howitzer or something. No, the deal is that, I mean, they were talking about some of the other countries that you'd think would have. You see those guys, for instance, over in the Middle East or in South America.
Man, they got nothing, man.
And they're firing their
And our poltergeist has more guns than they do.
That's right. He's not here tonight.
U.S. citizens own 270 million of the world's 875 million known firearms.
I could say that, known firearms. You know, give me a break. So there are not even a billion firearms on this planet? Bullshit.
About 4.5 million of the 8 million new guns manufactured worldwide each year are purchased in the U.S.
We're arms dealers here.
Pretty well, yeah, of course.
I like it.
What was our, my history teacher says? You know, this country was founded on guns, booze, and cigarettes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was our big three cash crops.
Well, tobacco anyway, yeah. But yeah,
right, that's what I'm saying. But
yeah. Cigarettes.
Yeah, no, it's I'm all for it. You know, we just need to get more guns. More cowbell, more guns.
Well, so speaking of terrorists here, I got a quick update here for us. Jose Padilla finally went to trial and was convicted.
Okay, now he was, explain it for
Jose
us.
Padilla was the guy who was arrested back in 2000 or 2001. No, actually, it's 2002, I think, right after the 9/11 things. They originally had said that he was conspiring to create a dirty bomb.
Oh, right.
With some people, and he had basically had contact with some camps over in Afghanistan in 2000, before 9/11. And that was the evidence they were using against him. It was largely all the evidence really that they had against him. They had two things. They had a piece of paper. This was the big damaging thing. A piece of paper that he had signed, five-page application to come train in the Al-Qaeda camps.
Well, God, can you imagine?
Now, here's the thing. In 2000, the Al-Qaeda camps were not thought of necessarily as terrorist camps.
Right.
This is just a foreign country.
Right.
And you could be going over there just to learn Muslimism or whatever it is.
Or just general how to operate a gun and everything.
Islam, whatever, yeah. And so there's nothing really, in my opinion, that is damaging about that, but I guarantee you a jury sees an application to go train with Al-Qaeda in post-9/11 world.
Of course, the question is what? Well, yeah, but it was like you said, it was pre-9/11, number one.
Right.
What was on five pages of application? What did you have to fill out, I wonder?
Your name.
No, that's not five pages.
Like Islam, why?
Okay, maybe that was it. Yeah, quote the Quran.
Something
so
like
anyway,
that.
So he was convicted. Now, the deal was, of course, he was like held incommunicado for a while, wasn't he?
Let me tell you, this guy was tortured. He was held for 3 years without being charged. By any account, to me, that's emotional, psychological torture. And the stuff they did to him, they have pictures of him with blackout shades and earphones on. I mean, sensory deprivation, they trapped him in his own mind.
Right.
And who knows for how long they did this, because he was denied his lawyer as well. And
now he's a citizen, United States citizen.
I think he is.
You know, Jesse's got this one thing from K-Man, just came in and goes, 9 guns for every 10 Americans? Sounds like that one ain't really American.
So here's the thing is that to me, this type of case, Gonzo said this was a significant victory. Now, to me.
Really?
Yeah.
If that's a significant victory, we got a problem. Yeah, we got a problem. If that's a significant victory, if you call that winning the war.
Exactly. Woo! Exactly.
Talk about a low bar.
I mean, seriously, after 6 years, they get this one guy on conspiracy to murder because of this. I guarantee you, because of this document that he filled out. They also alleged he was using code in his conversations with the Muslims, the people over there. You know, stuff like zucchini for guns and whatever.
Right.
To me, it really doesn't matter. He might have been doing all this. The problem to me is that it just all looks so bad that it just is, it just reeks. The entire case against him just reeks. And it really calls people like me, who are very patriotic, to call into question the methods that we're using in situations like this.
All that trouble for this one guy.
All that trouble, all this amazing.
I mean, you know, why would you bother to hold the guy incommunicado for 3 years? I mean, why bother? You know, you bring him up on charges, boom, done, go to jail. I mean, go to, you know, bring him up in front of the courts and be done with it.
Well, that's the only good thing that's come out of this is that people are now saying, look, you don't need Guantanamo. You can just put these people through trial and convict them if you can. And then, you know, he's going to get life or something. But to me, it sucks because the whole ordeal reeked so bad.
Well, you can see this is part of the system. As the system breaks down, as the system here, the system of freedom and checks and balances and everything in the United States, as it starts to break down under its own weight, these are the kind of things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense to me. Again, it's endemic of a system that is corrupt and collapsing at the same
time.
This happens to every empire in the world.
As another example of terrorism gone rampant, it appears now that chicken farms are going to be heavily scrutinized because of their propane that they...
I heard about that. Now, this was a deal that apparently on the chicken farms, as you know, a lot of course, the environmental people are out there because the chickens are like in these big, huge, long cages, you know, and they're like strapped down to fed and fattened up and then killed or whatever it is. But during the wintertime, you got to keep them warm. So they have these big, these huge, like propane heaters. And it's like just jillions of BTUs. I mean, they buy like, you know, just... Oh, this
lots
huge,
of
lots of propane, right? and now the Homeland Security people are saying the chicken farmers might decide in a fit of some kind of...
Or somebody could come over here disguised as a chicken farmer.
Or a chicken. And blow up one of those tanks.
Right.
You know, put a bullet in it.
They could buy a chicken farm and settle down in America as a splinter cell. And then... A mass propane.
Right.
And
at the appropriate time.
Right.
They would like put the propane onto a truck. Disguised as chicken. They'd pretend they're driving into town with their load of chickens.
Right.
But it would only be like on the top would be chickens.
Right. Underneath would be all the propane.
And all the bottom there would be this huge propane tank, and they'd drive up to the federal court building or whatever it is in Kabumo.
Apparently that's the threat that we're now paying to defend ourselves against.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, that's the first one that came to my mind.
It did.
I'm glad they finally locked that one down. Sweat off my brow on that one. That was a close call that they.
I tell you what, another attack thwarted.
Yeah, they know how to do it too. So there would like there's like a half a million chicken farms are going to put under some kind of surveillance or something.
Yeah, some huge. And they said, I love it in the article. They said, well, it would just take the average chicken farmer a couple of hours online to comply with this paperwork.
Yeah, online. Right?
Yeah, they're like a farmer. What the hell's online mean?
Well, not only that, you got to figure that they got.
While I'm fishing.
Yeah. Well, not only that, you got to figure they got a dial up.
I mean,
you know, it's not like they're
running an OC3 line.
It's not a T1 running up there to their shed. No, it's we're talking 1200 baud dial up,
right,
you know,
right.
So.
In a 1996 computer.
That's right.
'96. Yeah, to comply with that kind of computer and dial up speed takes 4 days.
Yeah, that's right. It's not 4 hours. It's four days. Let's see. I'm on to. You got anything else? I got light notes now. A couple of light notes.
Go with it.
You did see where some rich Russian tried to buy a U.S. bomber at the air show. A wealthy Russian tried to buy a B-52 bomber from a group of shocked American pilots at an air show near Moscow.
What happened?
Comrade. They said no. He offered him $500 million cash for the B-52. And they said, we're going to hang on to it. I don't know what that was all about. as the Puritan track in this country continues, of course, they're one of the big news, actually, surprisingly big news, has to do with a gambling dispute with a little tiny country, one of those islands. Now, you know, we've talked about those guys that got arrested by coming too near to the flame here in the United States.
Moth to a flame.
That's right, moth to a flame. They had a layover in Texas or in the Dominican Republic. We got swooped up because they were running gambling operations, offshore gambling operations. And the United States, of course, in its zeal to make sure that nobody gambles, unless, of course, it's a lottery or the horses
or
the dogs or the trotters, bingo's allowed, and some
for education.
Yeah, it's all for education for the children. So anyway, they have made it more difficult than way more difficult than it used to be to do the offshore gambling, and it turns out that. The little country of, what is it, Antigua? Yeah, Antigua and Barbuda, they're called. Tiny Caribbean nation in the Caribbean with a population around 70,000. They mostly cater tourists, but about half their business is this offshore gambling, which they don't do much in the United States anymore because of the restrictions. And, of course, they're a little tiny country about the size of this room. The little minor problem is they got a hold of some attorney that didn't really know what he was doing. He said, well, you know, according to the World Trade Organization, WTO rules, if you allow something in your own country, you can't not allow it from another country or however that works. So it turns out since we allow gambling in this country, Indian tribes and the horse races and so forth, the little tiny country said, well, you know, you can't stop us from doing it too on your shores. You'd allow everybody else to do it, not us. It turns out the WTO ruled against the United States. You know, Dave and Glad, they said, no, that's right. They're the little Antigua and Barbuda's right there, right on the money. And the United States. Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
And, of course, the United States, the WTO is kind of a, you know, it's like the UN in a way. I mean, they don't have any power. You know, where are their armies?
Right.
And so they can rule all they want, and the United States can tell them to go jump in the lake, which I'm guessing is probably what's going to happen. But the deal is they've got a ruling against them, and it's, you know, this is the international community that may possibly have some kind of a sway. And the punishment that Antigua Barbuda wants is they want the right to copy all of the United States intellectual property. That is to say, they want to be able to take all of the songs and DVDs and everything else. If you're not going to let us do the gambling thing as the penance or whatever it is, we're just going to go out and become the cloners, you know, rip-off art. What do you call those guys that
distributors?
Yeah, distributors for
unauthorized
copies of everything. And that might possibly create a little bit of a problem. So I wouldn't doubt that at some point the United States would send gunships down there and invade.
Definitely.
But it actually, the point is that what they've said is the WTO has ruled against the United States, and rightfully so. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, they surprisingly enough, this little country had all of the laws absolutely on their side. I mean, it made no sense at all. And the WTO had to read the book. I'm sure they tried to worm their way and weasel their way out of it, but it was right there in black and white. And even they had to say, sorry, United States, you're screwed on this one. You've got to let. So the option that the United States has is, of course, to ban all gambling in the United States. So they're not doing that. Yeah, like that'll happen. Well, of course, again, this brings up the whole story, and that is the only way any government can compete is to outlaw the competition. It is stunning when you think about it. They have made it. People, they are worried about the 5% of people that are, quote, addicted to gambling, and who's to say that they may or may not be doing damage to their families. There may be some people that are addicted to gambling that only hurt themselves, but let's assume that they all, you know, hurt their families, their kids, their wives, and who knows, and their grandmother and everybody else. It's 5%. But in order to stop that, they've disallowed 95% of the legitimate, honest to God, you know, not addicted gamblers. They have said, you can't gamble because these people over here. I mean, again, one size fits all, the whole deal. And the penalties and the solution is draconian. I mean, it's unbelievable what you can get caught doing. I mean, they can mount a raid on your house. You know, confiscate everything in sight and everything. Because why? Because of something that should not, that in fact is not illegal if you do it with under state sanction. I mean, on its face, this makes so like no sense you cannot imagine. Typical of what states do, typical of the puritanical lockdown. It's mind numbing to me to think that people actually are, the sheeple out here are letting people get away with this.
The sheeple.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, who are you to say that I can't gamble? You know, get lost. I want to run my own numbers game here on the up and down my street or whatever the heck it is. I mean, I remember when I was doing the stuff in Rotary, it turned out that some of the stuff we did technically was illegal. I mean, they could have raided us. You know, of course, it was all for charity. In fact, we did
bingo or whatever.
No, we had a little raffle that we did. But I mean, technically speaking, it was
gambling.
It's gambling. It was illegal. It was, and we had it set up. And I think that they actually worked a way around it. They got some special. Some of the clubs actually wrote to the attorney general and said, you know, we're going to do it this way. And he wrote back and said, well, if you announce these magic words, this incantation prior to each one, we will absolve you of any blame. I don't know what they were, you know. Just, you know, the attorney general said this is okay. Or something, you know. You know, and then it was okay. Some, you know, read the entrails. I don't know. So, again, they it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think I know how it's going to play out. There's certainly no way that the lottery people and the horse racing, paramutual people are going to give up any of this stuff. The Indians are not going to give up
any of
this.
The only thing we can hope for is that the gambling syndicate is stronger. Their lobbies are stronger than those people you just mentioned. The actual people who are really making money, this the Steve Wynn's and the...
Well, they've all moved to Macau.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because as you know, I don't know if you know this, but you talk about... gambling to Chinese is what firewater is to Indians. I mean, if you talk about an addiction, no, I'm serious. It's just no. That if you want to make money, I don't know if you know this, but it is a cultural addiction in China. Gambling. I mean, it is until Macau and those places opened up their wild places, they regularly Steve Wynn and those people would fly their people in from Hong Kong and China and everything like that to Las Vegas to gamble because then they have no limit. Their people are just totally addicted. But I mean, they will drop a couple of million bucks, easy, no problem. And they're the super high rollers and everything, but they can afford it, And then they went home and
I want gambling here in Florida.
Well, I it's
clean this place up a bit.
It's stunning to me to think that they get away with this. I mean, across the board here, for instance, liquor laws here in Florida on Sunday, if you want to go out and buy a hard liquor on Sunday in here, you can't do it. Even just beer and wine, you have to wait till like 11 o'clock.
Is it
1 o'clock?
One on Sunday.
But I mean this
after church.
After church.
Yeah, that's right.
That's another thing that comes up. I think
no drink fire water in space canoe.
Well, of course, when you go to church and take communion, you get to have a drink. I think that's probably one of the reasons they.
Yeah. Well, they want to get their little
small little bit of wine.
Right.
I'll have another. I'll take communion again, please.
Yeah. Hey, I've seen you before.
You've been in line twice.
Yeah, I went through the line twice. That was one of the things I was driving around town here. Speaking of that, I was driving around town here and I noticed how many churches we have in town. Boy, you talk about places that ought to be taxed. They ought to start taxing those, sending those people a property bill and see what happens.
Ooh.
I don't know why they shouldn't.
No, I know.
Okay, I'm done with that.
Speaking of, you just said incantations. Did you see the witch fight that was happening in Salem, Massachusetts?
What was with that? That was the one where they were throwing like dead raccoons or something on each other's porch. They were uttering, this is right out of Macbeth. I mean, they were, double bubble toil and trouble, and they were putting entrails on the porch and spells.
Right.
And then one of the witches, called up the sheriff and said, she's a spelling me or something. And wanted her arrested.
She's a witch.
And wanted her arrested for, disorderly conduct or something. Disorderly witchery.
Well, she turned me into a newt. A newt. We got better.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's just, and that's in Salem.
Yeah, in Salem.
I mean, we have, of course, I don't know if you know this, but apparently they've got quite a tourist industry up there. I guess they don't throw entrails on the tourists.
I guess not.
But, down, I don't know if you know this, but Florida has got the Coven.
Yeah, we got a wicked community down
here. It's the whole town. It's Casadega.
Yeah.
Down here. I mean, it's like the whole town. It's like a super tourist attraction and Wiccan attraction and everything. I mean, you can go down there and get a spell cast on you and everything.
Cool.
So we're not to be outdone by some old witch burning people
Heck
up in
no,
Massachusetts.
Man. No.
We show them maybe they all move south. That's right. No, I mean that's just I just had to laugh that one witch had to call the sheriff for something to for she's not witching right. Arrest her.
You see, Lisa Nowak was gonna plead insanity.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. Let me tell you, makes perfect sense to me. Anybody, first of all. He had to be kind of insane to be sitting on top of, 900 tons of blow-up dynamite, whatever the hell it is, after you knew that other people had already blown up.
Right.
I mean,
in more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be entirely sane to do that. And then you go up there and, I mean, you got hormones running and everything. Hell yeah.
Well, from a legal perspective, there's a number of insanity defenses, and I'm not sure which one she's using. I don't think
it's temporary.
Work.
I can tell you that.
Temporary.
No, I do know that. It is. They've got two or three psychologists say that the stress of the moment drove her over the edge for that time.
Okay. Well, that's a particular type of insanity test.
Right.
Which gets you a particular type of remedy. It basically removes the intent out of your crime. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to affect her.
Well,
situation.
The main thing is she's not still insane, according to this thing. In other
right.
words, she's not still nuts.
Right.
So
I don't think it's going to work very well.
Again, this is one of those things. Is she a hero or not? Or,
Yeah, she lost her mind for a little while,
she's an astronaut, and right. We got, $58 million tied up in her, so let her go. She ain't going to do it again. I don't think. She's a sponsor for Depends.
If I was the woman who's the subject of her near attack, I'd be wanting her to get some serious punishment. I mean, she had duct tape, how about some?
But she didn't actually do anything to it.
I know, but that's just because she got busted.
Yeah, well. Well, but that's why you have the police.
That's the police
did their job. No, I'm saying that what I'm saying is that she could have a restraining order against her and go through therapy.
Well, and that's what will happen most likely.
I mean, a year's worth of therapy and
I think she'll get some time though. I think.
I don't know why anybody would bother to get time for something like that. But anyway, okay, that be that as it may, you know, God love her.
Well, speaking of time, now I'd be a little Hollywood update here.
Okay. Oh, I haven't my Hugo update yet.
Oh, hey. No, but here, Hollywood update on three people. I'm going to update Foxy Brown, Lindsay Lohan, and Nicole Richie very, very briefly here.
Okay.
Foxy Brown just got busted. Her probation was revoked. She was driving and I guess heaved a cell phone out the window, her BlackBerry, and hit her neighbor. She's been in an ongoing dispute with the neighbor. And
must be nice that you can afford to throw your BlackBerry at somebody.
Apparently, yeah. So
that's assault of some kind.
I guess she rolled through a stop sign. And, yeah, she had, like, 7 tickets.
For one stop?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they do that anyway. It doesn't matter what. I mean, they'll always, you know.
Right. They'll load you down.
You know, while they're walking over there, they, you know, take out a taillight or something.
So she's in trouble for rolling through a stop sign. Nobody got hurt except for the neighbor person.
Apparently the neighbor got beamed. I mean, apparently she should be a pitcher or something. I heard that she like hit
from
her
from a moving car.
Moving car to another moving car. She nailed her on the nose or something. I mean, you know, maybe she should try out for the Mets or something.
And that's why she was on probation. So I don't think she'll get any time. All right, Lindsay Lohan pled guilty to her endeavor. She had a whole bunch of things. She had about 7 things she was being charged with. They found cocaine on her twice in the last few months, on May 26th and on July 24th, but it was hugely minimal amounts, 0.02 grams, 0.04 grams. So
that's the amount that, of course, yeah, they said that like 92% of the $100 bills in the United States got cocaine residue.
Yeah,
on
I mean, that's such a teeny tiny amount. It's ridiculous. But they did find
she
it.
Was out.
She was out.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The reason
you know where the other 0.96 grams were.
Yeah, we know. We know the other 4.99 grams were located in her nostril area.
Yeah. And so she gets basically nothing for all these charges. I mean, and they're gonna give her.
Hey, I'm off. Let me tell you something. I'm saying celebrities, famous people, let them off.
Yep.
That's it.
It's like engineer used to say about Michael Jackson. You know, he made billions of dollars, made billions of people happy.
He wants to find a few kids.
He should be allowed to bless a few kids.
Yeah. What's the problem here? I'm sorry. You know, come on. You know, you put that on the scales of justice and, you know.
Nicole Richie went in. She was supposed to get 10 days. She served 82 minutes.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Sweet deal she got. If it were here in Florida, she'd be doing 30 days.
Yeah.
But in California, apparently, this particular jail, they picked the right jail to get committed to because it's so overcrowded that people normally get released right away.
But I mean, it's interesting you said. How about the people that had already been in there for like 84 minutes or 87 minutes? Why didn't they get released first?
Yeah, well, because their name's not Nicole Richie.
That's exactly right. Okay, that's what I figured. Now, Nicole Richie, she's like a friend of Paris or something?
Yeah.
Okay, because I get her confused with the little girl who played in the Addams Family. What's her name? The
little girl that played in the Addams Family?
In the Addams Family
movie, you mean?
Yeah, the movie, right.
Oh.
Who is that? Her name's not Richie, is it? No, come on. She's a famous actress, and she's played in some movies. She's kind of grown up now, but in the Addams Family movie, she was the daughter.
It wasn't Anna Paquin, was it?
No. It's for some reason, I get her mixed up with Nicole Richie. Her name is like Richie or Ricky or something. I don't know. Somebody's going to do a search on it. Okay. Anything else?
So justice in Hollywood.
Justice in Hollywood. I'm all for it. I mean, you know, they live alive unto themselves. It's just so what?
It makes people think that the law is light on crime.
Yeah, of course. What's a crime? You know, in a lot.
Well, I mean, I agree. And in my opinion, another
Christina Ricci.
Yeah, Christina Ricci. See, I was close.
Look at that.
You know, with the Nicole Richie, now you can understand why I would be confused.
Yeah. But my point is this. These laws are out there, and for most people, they apply, and they apply harshly.
Harshly, right.
And they should not, first of all, they shouldn't be laws, and so and that's why people that are famous get this double standard treatment. They get treated like people should be treated in these situations. They get a slap on the wrist. Well, nothing happened in these situations.
Well, one of the things that I've determined is that people don't understand that there are certain things that are earned. You cannot beat into people. Respect is one. You earn respect. The law has to earn the respect. You earn respect for the law because the law is a respectful thing. It's like self-esteem. You can't beat self-esteem. That is something that comes from inside you. So the fact is that if the law is not deserving of respect, if it hasn't earned your respect, if it does silly things, if people are going to jail for things that you know in your heart, and enough of you know that it makes no sense at all, then it is not respected. And then, of course, once it's not respected on one level, it is suspect on all levels. And that's exactly what's happened. So that's with the drug, the gambling, and that sort of things that make no sense at all. The school thing, the truancy laws are having a big crackdown. And you look at this and you think, well, this doesn't make any sense at all. I have no respect for these people because, and I don't care what you say about destroying the family and so forth. You know, it's not my problem. You know, that person wants to shove something up his nose or whatever it is. And then in the process, of course, what the rest of us see is in their zeal to corral the gambling, for instance, or the drugs or whatever it is, they've created a whole new set of problems. Oh, twice over, three times over. And each time the respect for the law diminishes. And then they don't understand why there is no respect for law people. And it makes perfect sense. It's mostly people actually will do the right thing. If the law is not so convoluted for openers that everybody can understand it, that's another thing. You look here locally when you see some of our ordinance, or even our local little ordinances when they're passed, they call something, I think I've mentioned this before, they call it a leash law. It's 32 pages of gobbledygook with another two or three pages of fines of a series of, depending on what it is, that is a series of fines. If enforcement officer goes up to the fence but doesn't go through it and you don't let them in, that's $50. If you stick your hand through the thing, that's another $50. If you holler at them, that's another. I mean, they have this whole series of how many fines there are. And you look at this and you think, what the hell are you talking about? And as you mentioned before, you go through the stop, you know, you do a rolling through the stop sign and there's seven tickets on. The same thing happens here. Just because the guy comes up to your gate, he says something to you, which is in the book, you turn your back on him, you do something, and then all of a sudden you're in six offenses in this thing, each one anywhere from $50 to $200. As I said, here running a red light in this town, which now that the students are back in town, it's like automatic, $191.50. Thank you so much. I mean, you got to be kidding me. This is not a slap on the wrist. This is not anything designed to stop you from doing that as much as it is revenue enhancement. It's a way to make money. It's just that simple. Yes, I have so much for that. And this brings me on to the next thing, one of the last things I've got here. It has to do with a little Hugo update.
Hugo. Hugo. Charles. Hugo.
I love this guy.
Charles.
That's right. This is from an editorial about a week ago in the New York Times. Again, Newspeak, and surprisingly enough, the New York Times almost gets it right. Newspeak is alive and well in Venezuela. They use behind the Orwellian rhetorical tactics, his efforts to amass power and cling to it for as long as he can are undermining, and I love this, Venezuela's democracy, as if they have any. the main thing, of course, is holding the whole thing together is all the oil money that he's able to bribe a whole bunch of people. I know the question I always ask, he wants to be a president for life, and he's, apparently he's got he's until 2012, which is only another 5 years, but he's looking to do it for forever. And my question, of course, is if you're so good and so wonderful and everything, why wouldn't you want to go to an election just to, you know, hear the accolades every four, five, six years or so? I mean, if it's that great a thing, why are you afraid of an election is my question. His reform proposals would tighten the grip, nationalizing coal and gas, stripping the central bank of its independence, and allowing the government to carry out expropriations of private property without obtaining judicial authority first. Of course, that sounds a little like the Kelo decision up in this country. But I love this. It's the last line is good. And this, you mentioned this earlier, counselor. It's participatory democracy in which only Mr. Chavez and his friends get to participate. I think that's a great thing. I mean, I love this again. The reason I bring this up, and we do this every 10 days or so when we have the Jimmy Dones show, is to show you how literally every week, every 8 days, 10 days, whatever, Chavez has another grab for power, and the time is shortening before bullets will fly and the inflation rate down there, the money will be not even worth literally the paper it's printed on. So we're looking forward to that. One other thing I got here that I thought was kind of an interesting article, and this is had to do with the fires that were raging in Idaho recently. The wealthy, it's called, the title of this is The Wealthy Get an Extra Shield for Wildfires. Now, here's an example of when the market actually works. One of the things that I find interesting in all the states have insurance. They regulate the insurance industry in states, as they do so many things. They regulate the utilities, and they create problems because of the regulations. Well, interestingly enough, the, let's see, what is it? AIG, I guess it is. Yes, AIG, as part of their, deployed a crew to Idaho as part of its wildfire protection unit. High-end clients who are willing to pay what the company says is an average of $10,000 annually for homeowners insurance. What they did is when the fires came, they sent their own AIG trucks and planes out there to coat the houses down with fire retardant material.
No way.
Yeah, exactly. And they, I mean, and some of the owners would come home and they say, what happened here? And what was interesting, one of the guys across the street in this high-end neighborhood, some gated, you know, this is in one of these rich places in Idaho, said, hey, I'll pay you to do mine too.
Right.
And they said, no, well, you know, you're not insured with us. Sorry, you know, got a long list of other people. We are real clients. But it is interesting. The market has figured out in this article they talk about for $2,500 or $3,000, there are some people who are starting up, not insurance companies, who have said they'll do the same thing.
Right.
For that. But, I mean, what's fascinating about this is the market is responding to these fires. AIG is not an idiot. They are going to have to replace a $2 million home, but for $2,500 or $3,000, they come out there, they do a preemptive strike,
right,
and they go out there and they coat the damn thing down with whatever this stuff is in the hopes they won't have to pony up the extra. I mean,
absolutely.
It is just, to me, I love it because there's no government involved in this.
Nope.
This is everybody looking out for their own interests. And to me, I just love this.
It's beautiful.
No, it is. It is just. It makes perfect sense. I mean, it's just
tearing up over here.
Yeah, no, tearing up. Well, I've always said that the Public Service Commission here in Florida and the insurance industry, the insurance commissioner, these people ought to be eliminated. They are not. They are nothing but that causing problems. I remember one time, I bought a camera, a Sony camera. And in the box was a warranty, a special extended warranty from Sony. Now, the Best Buy people here tried to sell me theirs, you know, for an extra, you know, $100 or something like that. This is back, you know, some years ago. And the Sony people in the box, Best Buy guy didn't tell me about it, but in there said, you know, for $25 or $30, we'll give you 100%, you know, 3-year guaranteed, you know, replacement if anything breaks. Not valid in Florida.
And no kidding.
Yep, not valid in Florida. And I wrote to the insurance commissioner and got a form letter back that said this is a consumer protection measure. And I'm thinking, I wasn't exactly protected.
You were protected from protecting yourself.
Well, I was protected from saving $75 is what it was. I certainly wouldn't want to have, you know, because I who knows what I would have done with that extra $75.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yep.
Boys, that's great. And we'll do it again.
Absolutely.
Game weekend. I'm going to make some money.
That'd be great. Very cool.
And don't forget to, you can vote for us on some of these things. I don't know where they are. They're all on our website. Don't forget to go to jimmydoan.com.
Uh-huh.
There's buttons there where you can select all kinds of fun things.
Yep.
And it would be kind of interesting to get a vote or a
review.
We've got a couple of reviews. We've got a couple of nice reviews.
Yep.
So we're
talking about for the podcast directories and stuff.
Yeah, right. Podcast directories. Right. Yeah, you don't do it on our site. We already know how good we are.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
done doing
iTunes
good.
And those places.
Yeah. I did do a new blog entry.
Oh, good.
Yeah. There's a letter that I wrote to my sister about something.
Well, we'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you all again. Thank you, boys, for coming by.
No problem.
Hey, no problem, Jimmy.
And we've got dinner.
Hey, we left a lot of stuff unturned, a lot of stones. We'll probably do another show here real soon.
Yeah, we might do one this weekend. We didn't talk about Helmsley's dog getting $12 million.
Nope. Or the Iowa debates.
Iowa.
Nothing happened.
Okay, so we finished that.
Excellent.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Be sure to mention the Jimmy Doan Show at your next local libertarian meeting. Few animals were hurt in the taping of the Jimmy Doan Show.
Like this one.